one of us decides to incarnate upon this planet at particular points in time and space. We have chosen to come here to learn a particular lesson that will advance us on our spiritual evolutionary pathway. One of the ways to allow the process of life to unfold for you in a positive, healthy way is to declare your own personal truth. Choose to move away from the limiting beliefs that have been denying you the benefits you so desire. Declare that your negative thought patterns will be erased from your mind. Let go of your fears and burdens. For a long time now, I have been believing the following ideas, and they have worked for me. Everything I need to know is revealed to me. Everything I need comes to me in the perfect time-space sequence. Life is a joy and filled with love. I am loving and lovable and loved. I am healthy and filled with energy. I prosper wherever I turn. I am willing to change and to grow. And all is well in my world. I have learned that we don't always stay positive 100% of the time, and I include myself in this knowledge. As much as possible, I see life as a wonderful, joyous experience. I believe that I am safe. I have made it a personal law for me. I believe that everything I need to know is revealed to me, so I need to keep my eyes and ears open. When I had cancer, I remember thinking that a foot reflexologist would be very helpful to me. One evening I went to a lecture of some sort. Usually I sit in the front row because I like being close to the speaker. However, that night I was compelled to sit in the back row. And right after I sat down, a foot reflexologist sat next to me. We began to talk, and I learned that he even made house calls. I didn't have to look for him. He came to me. I also believe that whatever I need comes to me in the perfect time-space sequence. When something goes wrong in my life, I immediately start to think, all is well, it's okay, I know that this is all right, it's a lesson, it's an experience, and I'll pass through it. There is something here that is for my highest good. All is well. Just breathe. It's okay. And I do the best I can to calm myself so I can think rationally about whatever is going on. And of course, I do work through everything. It may take a little time, but sometimes things that seem to be great disasters really turn out to be quite good in the end, or at least not the disasters that they seem to be in the beginning. Every event is a learning experience. I do a lot of positive self-talk, morning, noon, and night. I come from a loving space of the heart, and I practice loving myself and others as much as I possibly can. My capacity to love expands all the time. What I do today is much more than I was doing 6 months or a year ago. I know a year from now my consciousness and my heart will have expanded and I'll be doing even more. I know that what I believe about myself becomes true for me, so I choose to believe wonderful things about myself. There was a time when I didn't, so I know I have grown and I continue to work on myself. I also believe in meditation. To me, meditation is when we sit down and turn off our dialogue long enough to hear our own inner wisdom. When I meditate, I usually close my eyes, take a deep breath, and ask, what is it I need to know? I sit and listen. I might also ask, what is it I need to learn, or what is the lesson in this? Sometimes we think we're supposed to fix everything in our lives, and maybe we're really only supposed to learn something from the situation. I remember when I first began to meditate, I had violent headaches for the first 3 weeks. Meditation was so unfamiliar and against all my usual inner programming. Nevertheless, I hung in there, and the headaches eventually disappeared. If you are constantly coming up with a tremendous amount of negativity when you meditate, it may mean that it needs to come up. And when you quiet yourself, it starts to flow to the surface. Simply see the negativity being released. Try not to fight it. Allow it to continue as long as it needs to. If you fall asleep when you meditate, that's all right too. Let the body do what it needs to do. It will balance out in time. Reprogramming your negative beliefs is very powerful. A good way to do it is by making a tape with your own voice saying your affirmations. Play it as you go to sleep. It will have a great deal of value for you because you will be listening to your own voice. An even more powerful tape would be your mother's voice telling you how wonderful you are and how much she loves you. Once you have the tape, it's good to relax the body before you begin reprogramming. Some people like to start with the tips of their toes and move to the top of their head, tensing and relaxing. However you do it, breathe and release the tension. Let the emotions go. Get to a state of openness and receptivity. The more relaxed you are, the easier it is to receive the new information. Remember, you are always in charge and you are always safe. It's wonderful to listen to tapes or read self-awareness books and do your affirmations. But what are you doing for the other 23 hours or so a day? You see, that is what really matters. If you sit down and meditate and then get up and rush to work and scream at somebody, that counts too. Meditations and affirmations are wonderful, yet what you do at other times are just as important. Treat doubt as a friendly reminder. I'm often asked questions about whether people are doing affirmations correctly or whether they are even working, and about doubt. I'd like you to think of doubt a little differently than you may have been. I believe that the subconscious mind resides in the solar plexus area of the body where you carry those gut feelings. When something sudden happens, don't you immediately get a strong feeling in your gut? It is where you take everything in and store it. Ever since we were little children, every message we have received, everything we have done, all the experiences we have had, all that we have said, have all gone into the filing cabinets right there in the solar plexus area. I like to think that there are little messengers in there, and when we think thoughts or have experiences, the messages go in, and the messengers file them in the appropriate files. For many of us, we have been building up files labeled, I'm not good enough, I'll never make it, I don't do it right. We have gotten absolutely buried under these files. Suddenly, we do a few affirmations such as, I'm wonderful and I love myself. And the messengers pick them up and say, what's this? Where does it go? We've never seen this one before. So the messengers call doubt. Doubt, come over here and see what's going on. So doubt picks up the message and asks the conscious mind, what's this? You've always been saying the other things. And on a conscious level, we can react in two ways. We can say, oh, you're right, I'm terrible, I'm no good, I'm sorry, that's not the right message, and go back to our old ways. Or we can say to doubt, that was the old message, I have no need for it now, this is the new message. Tell doubt to start a new file, because there will be lots of these loving messages coming through from now on. Learn to treat doubt as a friend, not the enemy, and thank it for questioning you. Use it to strengthen your new beliefs. It doesn't matter what work you do in this world. It doesn't matter if you are a bank president or a dishwasher, a housewife or a sailor. You have wisdom inside of you that is connected to universal truth. When you are willing to look within and ask a simple question such as, what is this experience trying to teach me? And if you are willing to listen, then you will have the answer. Most of us are so busy running around creating the soap opera and drama we call our lives that we don't hear anything. Don't give your power over to other people's pictures of right and wrong. They only have power over us when we give our power to them. Groups of people give their power over to others. It happens in a lot of cultures. Women in our culture often give their power to men. They say things like, "My husband won't allow me to." Well, that's certainly giving your power away. If you believe it, you box yourself into a place where you can't do anything unless you are given permission by another person. Who do you give your power to? The more open-minded you are, the more you learn, and the more you can grow and change. A woman once shared with me that when she got married, she was very unassertive because that was the way she was brought up. It took years for her to realize that her conditioning kept her locked in a corner. She blamed everyone, her husband and her in-laws, for her problems. Eventually, she divorced her husband. However, she still blamed him for so many things that were not right in her life. It took her 10 years to relearn her patterns and to take her power back. In hindsight, she realized that she was responsible for not speaking up and for not standing up for herself, not her husband or her in-laws. They were there to reflect back to her what she felt inside, a sense of powerlessness. Don't give your power away based on what you read either. I remember years ago I read some articles in a well-known magazine, and I happened to know something about each subject described in the articles. And in my opinion, the information was totally erroneous. The magazine lost all credibility for me, and I didn't read it again for many years. You are the authority in your life, so don't think that because something is in print, that it's always the truth. Inspirational speaker Terry Cole Whitaker wrote a wonderful book called What You Think of Me Is None of My Business. It's true. What you think of me is none of my business. It's your business. In the end, what you think of me is going out from you in vibrations and will come back to you. When we have illumination, when we become conscious of what we are doing, we can begin to change our lives. Life is really here for you. You need only ask. Tell life what you want and then allow the good to happen. Part 2. Dissolving the barriers. We want to know what is going on inside us so we can know what to let go. Instead of hiding our pain, we can release it totally. Chapter 5. Understanding the blocks that bind you. Chronic patterns of self-hate, guilt, and self-criticism raise the body's stress levels and weaken the immune system. Now that we understand a little more about the power that we have within us, let's take a look at what keeps us from using it. I think that almost all of us have barriers of some kind or another. Even when we do a lot of work on ourselves and clear out the blocks, new layers of old barriers still keep coming up. Many of us feel so flawed that we believe that we are not good enough and never will be. Again, if we find something wrong with us, then we are going to find something wrong with other people as well. If we are still continuing to say, "I can't do this because my mother said," or "my father did," then we have not yet grown up. So now you want to let your barriers go and perhaps learn something different that you didn't know before now. Perhaps one sentence here will trigger a new thought. Can you imagine how wonderful it would be if every day you learned a new idea that would help you let go of the past and create harmony in your life? When you become aware and understand the individual process of life, you will know what direction to take. If you put your energies into learning something about yourself, you will eventually see those problems and issues that you need to dissolve. We all have challenges in life. Everybody does. Nobody goes through life without them. Otherwise, what would be the purpose of coming to this particular school called Earth? For some, there are health challenges, and for other people, there are relationship challenges, or career, or financial challenges. Some have a little or a lot of everything. I think one of our biggest problems is that most of us haven't the faintest idea of what it is we want to let go. We know that it's not working, and we know what we want in our life, yet we don't know what's holding us back. So let's take time to look at the blocks that bind us. If you think for a moment about your own patterns and problems and the things that hold you back, which categories do they fall into? Criticism, fear, guilt, or resentment? I call these categories the big four. Which is your favorite one? Mine was a combination of criticism and resentment. Maybe you are like me and have two or three. Is it fear that always comes up, or guilt? Are you very, very critical or resentful? Let me point out that resentment is anger that is stuffed down. So if you believe you are not allowed to express your anger, then you have stored a lot of resentment. We cannot deny our feelings. We cannot conveniently ignore them. When I had my cancer diagnosis, I had to look very clearly at myself. I had to acknowledge some nonsense that I didn't want to admit about myself. For instance, I was a very resentful person, and I carried a lot of bitterness from the past. I said, "Louise, you have no time to indulge in that anymore. You really must change." Or, as Peter McWilliams says, "You can no longer afford the luxury of a negative thought." Your experiences always reflect your inner beliefs. You can literally look at your experiences and determine what your beliefs are. Maybe it's disturbing to consider, but if you look at the people in your life, they are all mirroring some belief you have about yourself. If you are always being criticized at work, it is probably because you are critical and have become the parent who once criticized the child. Everything in our lives is a mirror of who we are. When something is happening out there that is not comfortable, we have an opportunity to look inside and say, "How am I contributing to this experience? What is it within me that believes I deserve this?" We all have family patterns, and it is very easy for us to blame our parents or our childhood or our environment, but that keeps us stuck. We don't become free. We remain victims, and we perpetrate the same problems over and over again. So it really doesn't matter what anybody else did to you or what they taught you in the past. Today is a new day. You are now in charge. Now is the moment in which you are creating the future in your life and your world. It really doesn't matter what I say either, because only you can do the work. Only you can change the way you think and feel and act. I'm just saying that you can. You definitely can, because you have a higher power within you that can help you break free from these patterns if you allow it. You can remind yourself that when you were a little baby, you loved yourself for who you were. There is not one little baby who criticizes its body and thinks, "Oh, my hips are too big." Babies are thrilled and delighted just because they have bodies. They express their feelings. When a baby is happy, you know it. And when a baby is angry, the whole neighborhood knows it. They are never afraid to let people know how they feel. They live in the moment. And you were like that once. As you grew up, you listened to people around you, and you learned about fear and guilt and criticism from them. If you grew up in a family where criticism was the norm, then you are going to be critical as an adult. If you grew up in a family where you were not allowed to express anger, then you are probably terrified of anger and confrontation, and you swallow it and let it reside in your body. If you were raised in a family where everybody was manipulated by guilt, then you are probably going to be the same way as an adult. You are probably a person who runs around saying, "I'm sorry," all the time, and can never ask for anything outright. You feel you have to be manipulative in some way in order to get what you want. As we grow up, we begin to pick up these false ideas and lose touch with our inner wisdom. So we really need to release these ideas and return to the purity of spirit where we truly love ourselves. We need to reestablish the wonderful innocence of life and the moment-by-moment joy of existence, the same joy that a baby feels in its blissful state of wonder. Think of what you want to become true for yourself. State them in positive, not negative, affirmations. Now go to the mirror, look in your eyes, and repeat your affirmations. See what obstacles are in your way. When you begin to state an affirmation like, "I love and approve of myself," really pay attention to what negative messages come up, because as you recognize them, they become the treasures that will unlock the door to your freedom. Usually the messages are one of the four I mentioned earlier: criticism, fear, guilt, or resentment. And most likely you learn these messages from people back there. Some of you have chosen some difficult tasks to handle in this lifetime, and it is my belief that we really come here to love ourselves in spite of what they say or do. We can always go beyond our parents' or our friends' limitations. If you were a good little girl or boy, you learned your parents' limited way of looking at life. You see, you're not bad. You are good children. You learned exactly what your parents taught you. Now that you are grown up, you're doing the same thing. How many of you hear yourself saying what your parents used to say? Congratulations. They were very good teachers and you were very good students. But now it is time for you to begin to think for yourself. A lot of us may face resistance when we look in the mirror and repeat our affirmations. However, resistance is the first step to change. Most of us want our lives to change, but when we are told that we have to do something different, we say, "Who, me? Oh, I don't want to do that." Others may experience feelings of despair. Often if you look in the mirror and say, "I love you," the little child inside says, "Where have you been all this time? I've been waiting for you to notice me." And waves of sadness come up, because you've been rejecting the little child for a long, long time. When I did this exercise in one of my workshops, a woman said she was very, very scared. I asked her what frightened her, and she shared the fact that she was an incest survivor. Many of us have had this experience called incest, and we are learning to come through it. It's interesting that it occurs so often on our planet. We read so much about incest these days, yet I don't think it is happening any more now than it ever did. We have advanced to a state where we now feel that children have rights, and we are allowing ourselves to see this ugly sore in society. In order to release the problem, we have to first recognize it, and then we can work through it. Therapy is so important for incest survivors. We need a safe space where we can work through these feelings. When we have let the anger and the rage and the shame out, then we can move to the space where we can love ourselves. No matter what we are working on, we want to remember that the feelings that come up are just feelings. We are not in the experience anymore. We need to work on making the inner child feel safe. We want to thank ourselves for having had the courage to survive this experience. Sometimes when we're dealing with an issue such as incest, it's difficult to accept that the other person was doing the best he or she could at the time with the understanding and awareness and knowledge that they had. Acts of violence always come from people who were violated themselves. We all need healing. When we learn to love and cherish who we are, we will no longer harm anyone. Stop all criticism. When we are dealing with criticism, we are usually criticizing ourselves all the time for the same things over and over. When are we going to wake up and learn that criticism doesn't work? Let's try another tactic. Let's approve of ourselves as we are right now. Critical people often attract a lot of criticism because it is their pattern to criticize. What we give out, we get back. They may also need to be perfect at all times. Who's perfect? Have you ever met a perfect person? I haven't. If we complain about another person, we are really complaining about some aspect of ourselves. Everyone is a reflection of us, and what we see in another person, we see in ourselves. Many times we don't want to accept parts of who we are. We abuse ourselves with alcohol or drugs or cigarettes or overeating or whatever. These are ways of beating up on ourselves for not being perfect. But being perfect for who? Whose early demands and expectations are we still trying to meet? Be willing to let that go. Just be. You will find that you are wonderful just as you are this very moment. If you have always been a critical person who sees life through very negative eyes, it is going to take time for you to turn yourself around to be more loving and accepting. You will learn to be patient with yourself as you practice letting go of the criticism, which is only a habit, not the reality of your being. Can you imagine how wonderful it would be if we could live our lives without ever being criticized by anyone? We would feel totally at ease, totally comfortable. Every morning would be a wonderful new day because everyone would love you and accept you, and nobody would criticize you or put you down. You can give this happiness to yourself by becoming more accepting of the things that make you unique and special. The experience of living with yourself can be the most wonderful experience imaginable. You can wake up in the morning and feel the joy of spending another day with you. When you love who you are, you automatically bring out the best in you. I'm not saying that you will be a better person, because that implies that you're not good enough now. However, you will find more positive ways to fulfill your needs and to express more of who you really are. Guilt makes us feel inferior. Many times people give you negative messages because it is the easiest way to manipulate you. If someone is trying to make you feel guilty, ask yourself, what do they want? Why are they doing this? Ask these questions instead of inwardly agreeing, oh yes, I'm guilty, I must do what they say. Many parents manipulate their children with guilt because they were raised that way. They tell lies to the children to make them feel less than. Some people are still manipulated by their relatives and friends when they grow up because, first of all, they don't respect themselves. Otherwise, they wouldn't let it happen. Secondly, they are manipulative themselves. Many of you live under a cloud of guilt. You always feel wrong, or that you are not doing the right thing, or apologizing to someone for something. You will not forgive yourself for something you did in the past. You berate yourself for a lot that goes on in your life. Let these clouds dissipate. You don't need to live that way any longer. Those of you who feel guilty can now learn to say no and call people on their nonsense. I'm not saying to be angry with them, but you don't have to play their game anymore. If saying no is new to you, say it very simply. No, no, I cannot do that. Don't give excuses, or the manipulator will have ammunition to talk you out of your decision. When people see that manipulating you doesn't work, they will stop. People will only control you as long as you allow them to. You may feel guilty the first time you say no. However, it gets easier the next few times. A woman at one of my lectures had a baby who was born with a congenital heart disease. She felt guilty because she believed that it was her fault. She did something to the baby. Unfortunately, guilt does not solve anything. In her case, no one did anything wrong. I told her that I thought it could have been a soul choice for the baby and a lesson for both the mother and baby. My answer for her was to love the baby and love herself and stop feeling that she did something wrong. That sort of guilt would not heal anyone. If you do something that you are sorry about, stop doing it. If you did something in the past that you still feel guilty about, forgive yourself. If you can make amends, do it, and don't repeat the action again. Every time guilt comes up in your life, ask yourself, what do I still believe about myself? Who am I trying to please? Notice the childhood beliefs that come up. When somebody comes to me who's been involved in a car accident, there is usually guilt on a deep-seated level and a need for punishment. There can also be a lot of repressed hostility because we feel we don't have the right to speak up for ourselves. Guilt seeks punishment, so we can literally become our own judge, jury, and executioner, condemning ourselves to a self-imposed prison. We punish ourselves, and there is no one around to come to our defense. It's time to forgive ourselves and set ourselves free. One elderly lady at one of my seminars felt enormous guilt about her middle-aged son. He was an only child who grew up to be a very withdrawn person. She felt guilty because she was very strict with him while he was growing up. I explained that she had done the best she knew how to do at the time. I believe he chose her as a mother before he incarnated into this lifetime, so on a spiritual level he knew what he was doing. I told her that she was wasting all her energy feeling guilty about something that she couldn't change. She sighed and said, "It's such a shame that he's this way, and I'm sorry I did a bad job." Now you see, that's wasted energy, because it doesn't help her son now, and it certainly doesn't help her. Guilt becomes a very heavy burden and makes people feel inferior. Instead, I told her that every time the feeling came up, she could say something like, "No, I don't want to feel that way anymore. I'm willing to learn to love myself. I accept my son exactly as he is." If she continued to do this, the pattern would start to shift, and she would free both of them. Even if we don't know how to love ourselves, the fact that we are willing to love ourselves will create the difference. It's just not worth it to hold on to these old patterns. The lesson is always love yourself. Her lesson was not to heal her son, but to love herself. He came into this life to love himself. She can't do it for him, and he can't do it for her. Organized religions are often really good at making people feel guilty. Many of them do some heavy numbers to keep people in line, especially when they are young. However, we aren't little children anymore, and we don't have to be kept in line. We are adults who can decide what we want to believe. The child in us feels the guilt, but there is also the adult in us who can teach the child otherwise. When you hold your emotions down or hold things in, you create havoc within you. Love yourself enough to allow yourself to feel your emotions. Allow your feelings to come to the surface. At first, you may find yourself crying for days or getting angry a lot. You may have to process quite a bit of old stuff. I suggest you do affirmations that make going through the process easier, smoother, and more comfortable, such as, "I now release with ease all old negative beliefs. It is comfortable for me to change. My pathway is now smooth. I am free of the past. Also, don't add judgment to your feelings. That only pushes the feelings down even more. If you are going through incredible dilemmas or crises, affirm that you are safe and that you are willing to feel. Affirming these positive feelings will bring about beneficial changes. Chapter 6. Letting Your Feelings Out. A tragedy can turn out to be our greatest good if we approach it in ways from which we can grow. Releasing anger in positive ways. Everyone deals with anger at one time or another in their lives. Anger is an honest emotion. When it is not expressed or processed outwardly, it will be processed inwardly, in the body, and usually develops into a dis-ease or dysfunction of some sort. Like criticism, we usually get angry about the same things over and over again. When we are angry and we feel we don't have a right to express it, we swallow it down, which causes resentment, bitterness, or depression. So it's good to handle our anger when it comes up. There are several methods to deal with anger in positive ways. One of the best is to talk openly to the person with whom you are angry and to release the pent-up emotions. You can say, "I am angry with you because." When we feel like screaming at someone, then the anger has been building up for a long time. Often it is because we feel we cannot speak to the other person. So the second best way to let the anger out is to talk to the person in the mirror. Find yourself a place where you will feel safe and will not be disturbed. Look into your own eyes in the mirror. If you find that you cannot, then concentrate on your mouth or nose. See yourself and or the person who you believe has done something wrong to you. Remember the moment when you became angry and let yourself feel the anger come through you. Begin to tell this person exactly what you are so angry about. Show all the anger you feel. You could say something like, "I am angry at you because," or "I am hurt because you did," or "I am so afraid because you..." Just get all your feelings out. If you feel like expressing yourself physically, then get some pillows and start hitting them, or twist a towel. Don't be afraid to let your anger take its natural course. You have already kept your feelings bottled up too long. There is no need to feel any guilt or shame. Remember, our feelings are thoughts in action. They serve a purpose, and when you let them loose from your mind and body, you allow space inside for other, more positive experiences. When you have finished expressing your anger to the other person or persons, do your best to forgive them. Forgiveness is an act of freedom for yourself, because you are the one who will benefit from it. If you can't forgive someone, then the exercise is just a negative affirmation and is not healing for you. There is a difference between releasing and just rehashing old angers. You may want to say something like, "Okay, that situation is over. That is in the past now. I don't approve of your action, and yet I understand that you were doing the best you could with the knowledge and understanding you had at the time. I am done with this. I release you and let you go. You are free, and I am free." You may want to do this exercise several times before you truly feel that you have gotten rid of all your anger. You may also want to work on one anger issue or several. Do what feels right for you. There are other methods we can use to release the anger. We can scream into a pillow. We can kick pillows. We can beat the bed or a punching bag. We can write a hate letter and then burn it. We can scream in our cars with the windows rolled up. We can play tennis or go to the golf range and just hit balls one after another. We can exercise, swim, or run around the block several times, or just punch the air. We can write or draw our feelings using our non-dominant hand. The creative process is a natural release for emotions. One man at my seminar said he used an egg timer as he began screaming into a pillow. He gave himself 10 minutes to let out all his frustrations and anger about his father. After 5 minutes, he was exhausted, and every 30 seconds he would look at the egg timer and realize he still had a few more minutes to go. I used to beat the bed and make a lot of noise. I can't do that now because my dogs get frightened and think I'm angry at them. Now I find it very effective to scream in the car or dig a hole in the garden or bat a ball around. As you can see, you can become quite creative when releasing your feelings. I recommend that you do something physically to release charged up emotions in a safe way. Don't be reckless or dangerous to yourself or others. Remember also to communicate with your higher power. Go within and know that there is an answer to your anger and that you will find it. It is very healing to meditate and visualize your rage flowing freely out of your body. Send love to the other person and see your love dissolve whatever disharmony there is between you. Be willing to become harmonious. Perhaps the anger you feel is reminding you that you aren't communicating well with others. By recognizing it, you can correct it. It's amazing how many people tell me how much happier they have become once they release anger towards another person. It's as though a huge burden has been dropped. One of my students had a difficult time letting her anger out. Intellectually, she understood her feelings, yet she couldn't express them outwardly. Once she allowed herself this expression, she kicked and screamed and called her mother and her alcoholic daughter all sorts of names. She felt a tremendous weight lift from her. When her daughter visited her afterwards, she couldn't stop hugging her. She had allowed room for love to come inside where all the repressed anger had been. Maybe you have been a person who's been angry for a major part of your life. You have what I call habitual anger. Something happens and you get angry. Something else happens and you get angry again. Once more it happens and you keep getting angry. But you never go beyond getting angry. Habitual anger is childish. You always want your own way. It would be helpful to ask yourself, why am I choosing to be angry all the time? What am I doing to create situation after situation that angers me? Is this the only way I can react to life? Is this what I want? Who am I still punishing or loving? Why do I want to be in this state? What am I believing that causes all these frustrations? What am I giving out that attracts in others the need to irritate me? In other words, why do you believe that to get your way, you need to get angry? I'm not saying that there are no injustices, and there aren't times when you have a right to feel angry. However, habitual anger is not good for your body because it lodges in there. Notice what you focus on most of the time. Sit in front of a mirror and look at yourself and ask, who are you? What is it that you want? What makes you happy? What can I do to make you happy? Now is the time to do something else. Create a new space inside yourself for loving, optimistic, and cheerful patterns. People often get angry while they're driving their cars. People often express their frustrations about the other lousy drivers on the road. Long ago, I got over the fact that I was going to be upset because of someone else's inability to follow the rules of the road. So the way I handle driving my car is, first, I put love into the car when I get in. Next, I know and affirm that I'm always surrounded by wonderful, competent, happy drivers. Everyone around me is a good driver. Because of my beliefs and affirmations, whenever I'm on the road, I have very few poor drivers around me. They're off bothering the person who's shaking his fist and screaming. You know, your car is an extension of you, just like everything and everyone are extensions of you. So put some love into your car, and then send love out to everyone around you on the streets and highways. I believe that the parts of your car are similar to the parts of your body. For instance, one of my workers felt that she had no vision, that she could not see where her life was going or where she wanted it to go. One morning she woke up and found her windshield smashed. Another person, an acquaintance of mine, felt that he was stuck in his life. He was not moving forward or moving backward, but was not moving at all. And his tire became flat and he couldn't move anywhere. I know it may sound silly at first, but it's fascinating to me that the terminology that these two people used to describe their current mental state also related to their car. Having no vision means that you can't see in front of you. The windshield is a perfect metaphor. Likewise, being stuck is a perfect example of a flat tire. The next time something happens to your car, make a note as to what you feel the broken parts represent and see if you can connect it to how you are feeling at that particular moment or what is going on in your life. You may be surprised at the results. One day I will write a little book and call it Heal Your Automobile. There was a time when people did not understand the body-mind connection. Now it is time for us to expand our thinking even more and to understand the machinery-mind connection. Every situation in your life is a learning experience and can be handled so that it works for you. There is nothing new or unique about anger. No one escapes the experience. The key is in recognizing it for what it is and taking that energy in a healthier direction. If you get sick, don't get angry over it. Instead of putting anger into your body, fill it with love and forgive yourself. Those of you who are caretakers for sick people can also remember to take care of yourselves, too. If you don't, you won't be any good to yourself or your friends or family. You will burn out. Do something to let your feelings out as well. Once you learn to deal with anger in a positive way that readily benefits you, you will find many wonderful changes occurring in the quality of your life. Resentment causes a variety of ills. Resentment is anger that has been buried for a long time. The main problem with resentment is that it lodges in the body, usually in the same place, and in time it seethes and eats away at the body and often turns into tumors and cancers. Therefore, repressing anger and letting it settle in our bodies is not conducive to good health. Again, it's time to let those feelings out. Many of us were raised in families where we weren't allowed to be angry. Women, in particular, were taught that to be angry was something bad. Anger was not acceptable, except for one person, usually a parent. So we learned to swallow our anger rather than express it. Again, we can now realize that we are the ones who are holding on to it. Nobody else is involved at all. An oyster takes a grain of sand, and it builds layer after layer after layer of calcite over it until it becomes a beautiful pearl. In the same way, we take our emotional hurts and nurse them over and over again by what I call running the old movie over and over in our minds. If we want to be free from our hurts, if we want to get out of them, then it's time to go beyond them. One of the reasons women create cysts and tumors in the uterus is through what I call the he done me wrong syndrome. The genitals represent either the most masculine part of the body, the masculine principle, or the most feminine part of the body, the feminine principle. When people have emotional episodes, usually in relationships, they take it to one of those areas. With women, they may take it to their female organs, their most feminine part, and nurse the hurt until it becomes a cyst or tumor. Since resentment is buried deeply inside us, we may have to do a lot of work to dissolve it. I received a letter from a woman who was working on her third cancer tumor. She still had not dissolved the resentment pattern and kept creating new tumors in her body. I could tell she felt very self-righteous about her bitterness. It was easier for her to let the doctor remove the latest tumor than to work on forgiveness. It would have been good if she had been able to do both. Doctors are good at removing growths. Only we can keep them from reappearing. Sometimes we would rather die than change our patterns, and we do. I have noticed that many people would rather die than change their eating habits, and they do. This is very disturbing when it happens to someone we love and we are aware of alternative choices they could make. No matter what choices we make, they are always right for us, and there is no blame, even if we leave the planet. We will all leave the planet in time, and we will all find a way to do it at the right time for us. Again, we don't have to blame ourselves for failing or doing it wrong. We don't have to feel guilty. There is no blame. No one does it wrong. A person does the best he or she knows how to do with the understanding and awareness that is available. Remember, we all have the power within us, and we all come here to learn certain lessons. Our higher selves know our destiny in this lifetime and what we must learn in order to move forward in our evolutionary process. There is never any wrong way. There just is. We are all on an endless journey through eternity, and we have lifetime after lifetime. What we don't work out in this life, I believe we will work out in another. Suppressed feelings lead to depression. Depression is anger turned inward. It is also anger that you feel you do not have a right to have. For instance, you may feel it's not okay to be angry at your parent or spouse or employer or best friend, and yet you are angry and you feel stuck. That anger becomes depression. Far too many people today suffer from depression, even chronic depression. By the time we feel that depressed, it's very difficult to get out of it. It feels so hopeless that it becomes an effort to do anything. I don't care how spiritual you are, you have got to wash your dishes every now and then. You can't let the sink pile up with dirty dishes and say, "Oh, I'm metaphysical." The same with your feelings. If you want to have a mind that flows freely, then clean up your inner mental dirty dishes. One of the best ways is to give yourself permission to express some of your anger so that you won't have to stay so depressed. There are now therapists that specialize in anger releasing. Having a session or two with one of them could be most helpful. It's my personal opinion that we all need to beat the bed once a week, whether we feel angry or not. There are some therapies that encourage you to get into your anger. However, I think that they often keep you immersed in the anger process too long. Anger, like any emotion that surfaces, lasts only a few minutes. Babies move in and out of their emotions very quickly. It is our reaction to the emotion that causes us to hold and repress it. Author Elizabeth Kubler-Ross uses a wonderful exercise in her seminars, which she calls externalization. She has you take a piece of rubber hose and some old phone books, and you beat them over and over again, letting all sorts of emotions emerge. When you're releasing anger, it's okay to be embarrassed about it, especially if it was against your family rules to get angry. It will be embarrassing the first time you do it. But when you get into it, it can be such fun and very powerful. God is not going to hate you for being angry. Once you have released some of this old anger, you will be able to see your situation in a new light and find new solutions. Another one of the suggestions I would make for a person who is depressed is to work with a good nutritionist and really get your diet cleaned up. It's amazing how that can help the mind. People who are depressed often eat very poorly, which adds to the problem. We all want to make the best choices so that the food we are taking in is good for our body. Also, many times we find there is a chemical imbalance in the body that is further aggravated by the intake of medication of some sort. Now, rebirthing is another wonderful process for releasing your feelings because it goes beyond the intellect. If you have never had a rebirthing session, I recommend that you try one. It has been very helpful for many people. It's a breathing modality that helps you connect with old issues so that you can release them in a positive way. Some rebirthers have you repeat your affirmations as you're going through the process. Then there is body work, such as Rolfing, a process of deep connective tissue manipulation developed by Ida Rolf, or Heller work, or Traeger work. They are all excellent ways to release restrictive patterns in the body. Different processes work differently for each person. One process may be good for one, yet not for another. We can only find what is best for us by trying different avenues. Self-help sections in bookstores are excellent places to read about different alternatives. Health food stores often have bulletin boards that list meetings and classes. When the student is ready, the teacher appears. Fear is not having trust. Fear is rampant on the planet. You can see and hear about it in the news every day in the form of wars and murders and greed and more. Fear is a lack of trust in ourselves. Because of that, we don't trust life. We don't trust that we are being taken care of on a higher level, so we feel we must control everything from the physical level. Obviously, we're going to feel fear because we can't control everything in our lives. Trust is what we learn when we want to overcome our fears. It's called taking the leap of faith. Trust in the power within that is connected to universal intelligence. Trust in that which is invisible instead of trusting only in the physical material world. I'm not saying that we do nothing, yet if we have trust, we can go through life much easier. If you recall what I said earlier, I believe that everything I need to know is revealed to me. I trust that I'm being taken care of, even though I am not physically in control of everything that's happening around me. When a fearful thought comes up, it is really trying to protect you. I suggest you say to the fear, "I know you want to protect me. I appreciate that you want to help me, and I thank you." Acknowledge the fearful thought. It's there to take care of you. When you become physically frightened, your adrenaline pumps through your body to protect you from danger. It's the same with the fear you manufacture in your mind. Observe your fears and recognize that you are not them. Think of fear the way you view images on a movie screen. What you see on the screen is really not there. The moving pictures are just frames of celluloid, and they change and disappear very rapidly. Our fears will come and go as rapidly as those pictures, unless we insist on holding on to them. Fear is a limitation of our minds. People have so much fear about getting sick or old or about becoming homeless or whatever. Anger is fear that becomes a defense mechanism. It protects you. And yet it would be so much more powerful for you to do affirmations so you can stop recreating fearful situations in your mind and love yourself through the fear. Again, nothing comes from outside of us. We are at the center of everything that happens in our lives. Everything is inside. Every experience, every relationship is a mirror of a mental pattern that we have inside us. Fear is the opposite of love. The more we are willing to love and trust who we are, the more we attract these qualities to ourselves. When we are on a streak of really being frightened or upset or worried or not liking ourselves, isn't it amazing how everything goes wrong in our lives? one thing after another. It seems it will never stop. Well, it is the same when we really love ourselves. Everything starts to go on a winning streak, and we get the green lights in the parking places. All of the things that make life so wonderful, the big and the little, we get up in the morning and the day flows beautifully. Love yourself so that you can take care of yourself. Do everything you can to strengthen your heart, your body, and your mind. Turn to the power within you. Find a good spiritual connection and really work on maintaining it. If you are feeling threatened or fearful, consciously breathe. We often hold our breath when we are frightened, so take a few deep breaths. Breathing opens the space inside you that is your power. It straightens your spine, it opens your chest, and gives your heart room to expand. By breathing, you begin to drop the barriers and open up. You expand rather than contract. Your love flows. You could say, I am one with the power that created me. I am safe and all is well in my world. Cleaning up our addictions. One of the primary ways we mask our fear is through addictions. Addictions suppress the emotions so that we don't feel. However, there are many kinds of addictions besides the chemical ones. There are also what I call pattern addictions, patterns we adopt to keep ourselves from being present in our lives. If we don't want to deal with what's in front of us, or if we don't want to be where we are, we have a pattern that keeps us out of touch with our lives. For some people, it's a food addiction or a chemical addiction. There may be a genetic disposition for alcoholism, however. The choice to stay sick is always an individual one. So often when we talk about something being hereditary, it is really the little child's acceptance of the parent's ways of handling fear. For others, there are emotional addictions. You can be addicted to finding fault in people. No matter what happens, you will always find someone to blame. It's their fault. They did it to me. Maybe you are addicted to running up bills. There are many of you addicted to being in debt. You do everything you can to keep yourself head over heels in debt. It doesn't seem to have anything to do with the amount of money you have. You can be addicted to rejection. Everywhere you go, you attract others who reject you. You will find them. However, the rejection on the outside is a reflection of your own inner rejection. If you don't reject yourself, nobody else will either. Or if they do, it certainly won't matter to you. Ask yourself, what am I not accepting about myself? There are plenty of people addicted to illness. They are always catching something or worrying about getting sick. They seem to belong to the illness of the month club or illness of the week. If you're going to be addicted to anything, why not be addicted to loving yourself? You can be addicted to doing positive affirmations or doing something that is supportive of you. Compulsive overeating. I receive a lot of letters from people with weight problems. They go on diets that last 2 or 3 days or weeks, and then they stop. They feel guilty about falling off their diets. And instead of recognizing that they did what they could at the time, they get angry at themselves and feel guilty. Then to punish themselves, because guilt always seeks punishment, they go out and eat foods that are not good for their bodies. If they could acknowledge that for the 2 weeks that they followed a particular regime, they were doing something wonderful for their bodies, and stop laying guilt trips on themselves, they would begin to break the pattern. They could also begin to say, I used to have a problem with weight. Now I allow myself to be the perfect weight for me. And the pattern would start to shift inside. Yet we don't want to concentrate on the food issue too much, for that is not where the problem lies. Overeating has always meant a need for protection. When you feel insecure or frightened, you pad yourself with a layer of safety. Weight has nothing to do with food. Most of you spend a lifetime being angry at yourself for being fat. What a waste of energy. Instead, realize there is something going on in your life that is making you feel unsafe and insecure. It could be your work, your spouse, your sexuality, or your life in general, or early belief patterns. If you are overweight, put the food weight issue aside and work on the pattern that says, I need protection because I'm insecure. It's amazing how our cells respond to our mental patterns. When the need for protection is gone, or when we start feeling secure, the fat will melt off. I have noticed in my own life that when I'm not feeling safe, I will gain some weight. When my life is going so fast and I'm doing so much and I'm spreading myself all over the place, I feel a need for protection, a need for security. So I say, okay, Louise, it's time to work on safety. I want you to really know that you are safe and it's okay and you can do all this stuff and you can be at all these places and you can have all that's happening right now and you are safe and I love you. When I feel secure again, the weight melts away. Weight is only the outer effect of a fear that is inside you. When you look in the mirror and see the fat person staring back, remember that you are looking at the result of your old thinking. When you start to change your thinking, you are planting a seed for what will become true for you. What you choose to think today will create your new figure tomorrow. One of the best books on releasing excess weight is The Only Diet There Is by Sandra Ray. It's all about dieting from negative thinking, and she shows you step by step how to do it. Self-help groups. Self-help groups have become the new social form. I see this as a very positive move. These programs do tremendous good. People with similar problems getting together, not to whine and complain, but to find ways to work through these issues and improve the quality of their lives. There is now a group for almost every problem you can think of. Many of them are listed in the phone book under Community Services in the front of your yellow pages. I know you can find one that is right for you. Many churches now hold group meetings. You could even go to the local health food store, one of my favorites, and see what is listed on their bulletin board. If you are serious about changing your life, you will find the way. The 12-step programs are everywhere. 12-step programs have been around for some time, and they have developed a format that really works and brings about wonderful results. Their Al-Anon program for people who live with or were raised by addicted people is one of the best groups for all sorts of people. Feelings are our inner gauge. When growing up in a troubled or dysfunctional family, we learn to avoid conflict whenever possible, and this results in the denial of our feelings. We often do not trust others to meet our needs, so we don't even ask for help. We are convinced that we must be strong enough to handle things ourselves. The only problem is that we fail to be in touch with our own feelings. Feelings are our most helpful link to our relationship with ourselves, others, and the world around us, and they are an indication of what's working or not working in our lives. Shutting them off only leads to more complex problems and physical illnesses. What you can feel, you can heal. If you don't allow yourself to feel what is going on inside of you, you won't know where to begin the healing process. On the other hand, many of us seem to go through life always feeling guilty or jealous or fearful or sad. We develop habit patterns that keep repeating the same experiences that we say we don't want to have. If you keep feeling angry or sad or fearful or jealous and don't get in touch with the underlying cause, you will continue to create more anger, sad, fear, etc. When we stop feeling like victims, we are able to take our power back. We must be willing to learn the lesson so the problem can disappear. When we trust the process of life and our spiritual connection with the universe, we can dissolve our angers and fears as soon as they appear. We can trust in life and know that everything is happening in divine right order and in the perfect time-space sequence. Chapter 7, Moving Beyond the Pain. We are far more than our bodies and personalities. The inner spirit is always beautiful and lovable, no matter how our outer appearances may change. The pain of death. It's wonderful to be positive. It's also wonderful to acknowledge what you are feeling. Nature has given you feelings to get you through certain experiences, and to deny them causes more pain. Remember, death is not a failure. Everyone dies. It's part of the process of life. When someone you love dies, the mourning process takes at least a year. So give yourself that space. It's difficult to have to go through all the holidays and seasons, Valentine's Day, your birthday, your anniversary, Christmas, etc. So be very gentle with yourself and let yourself grieve. There are no rules, so don't make any for yourself. It's also okay to get angry and have hysterics when someone dies. You can't pretend it doesn't hurt. You want to give your feelings an outlet. Let yourself cry. Look in the mirror and scream, "It isn't fair," or whatever you feel inside. Again, let it out. Otherwise, you will create problems for your body. You want to take care of yourself the best you can, and I know it's not always easy. Those of us who have been working with people with AIDS find that the grieving process becomes ongoing. It's the same as the grieving process in wartime. There are too many onslaughts to the emotional nervous system to handle. Many times I reach out to special friends and dissolve into hysterics when it all becomes too much. It was much easier when my mother died. I felt the natural completion of her 91-year cycle. Though I grieved, I had no anger or rage at injustice or untimeliness. Wars and epidemics bring up tremendous frustration at the seeming unfairness of it all. Although grieving takes time, sometimes you feel like you're in a bottomless pit. If you are still grieving after a few years, then you are wallowing in it. It becomes an addiction. You need to forgive and release the other person and yourself. Remember, we don't lose anyone when they die because we never owned them in the first place. If you are having a difficult time letting go, there are several things you can do. First of all, I suggest you do some meditations with the person who is gone. No matter what he or she thought or did while they were alive, when they leave the planet, a veil lifts and they see life very clearly. So they no longer have the fears and the limiting beliefs that they had when they were here. If you are grieving a lot, they would probably tell you not to worry because all is well. In your meditations, ask the person for help to get you through this period and tell them that you love them. Don't judge yourself for not being with the person or doing enough for the person while they were alive. That's just adding guilt to your grief. Some of you use this time as an excuse for not getting on with your own life. Some of you would like to leave the planet too. Or, for some of you, the death of someone you know and love brings up your own fear of death. Use this time to do inner work on yourself so you can release some of your own stuff. A lot of sadness comes to the surface upon the death of a loved one. Let yourself feel the sadness. You need to get to a point where you feel safe enough to let the old pains come up. If you would allow yourself 2 or 3 days of crying, much of the sadness and guilt would disappear. If you need to, find a therapist or a group to help you feel safe enough so that you can release the emotions. Another suggestion is to say affirmations like, I love you and I set you free. You are free and I am free. One woman was having a very difficult time letting go of the anger she felt towards an aunt who was very ill. She was terrified that her aunt would pass away and she would not be able to communicate how she really felt about the past. She didn't want to speak with the aunt because she felt all choked up inside. I suggested to her that she work with a therapist, for one-on-one work can be so helpful. When we are stuck in any area, it is an act of love for ourselves to reach out for help. There are many types of therapists all over who are experienced in these situations. You don't need to go for a long time, just a short while, so that you can get through your difficult period. There are also many grief support groups. It might be helpful for you to join one because it would assist you as you go through the process.